Another DFTH number of my different, okay, you can find it. Done in collaboration with Pietro Antonio Grassi, and a brief outline of my talk. This first I will give a very brief review of Q-spin of quantization. For a motivation, and also this is the most important application of the Q-spin management. Then we'll talk about these beta-gamma systems, of which Q-spinors are an example. And then at last I will come to our proposal in this paper about how to study these systems using the method of causal resolution. Okay, first, I assume probably most of people are familiar, or at least know, that if you want to quantize the superstring in a way which preserves manifestly the supersymmetry of the target space, you need to use the Green-Schwarz formalism, where but the string's coordinates are the target space coordinates and theta semi-normal coordinates in superspace. So you use basically 10-dimensional superspace. And and you can write down an action for this thing, but because these are 16 components variants, they are Majorana-like variants in 10 dimensions, you must have some local symmetry, which brings down the number of components to 8, so you can have a supersymmetric multiplet because of shadows, so the bosons have 8 components. And this symmetry is so-called kappa symmetry of the Green-Schwarz action. I'm not going to give the action, but this action has some symmetries which are encoded in the following constraints. P alpha is the conjugate momentum of theta, and so one can recognize this as being the generator of the superderivative in superspace. And the algebra of the constraints doesn't close, rather the commutator of two constraints give the momentum. And because of the Virasoro constraints, one also has, of course, representation invariance on the worksheet, and the Virasoro constraints imply that phi is, where phi is the, I should say, the supersymmetrized momentum. And it's lifelike on shell because of the Virasoro constraint. This implies that these constraints are half first class and half second class. So if you choose a particular basis for gamma matrices, phi m gamma m is a matrix which can be written in this block of diagram where it's nilpotent. And in this basis you can see that half of the constraints actually are first class, where first class means that they close on themselves, so you can find some subset of constraints. In fact, phi slash d is zero on shell, but these are only half of the constraints, and the other half are second class, but you still need to impose them on to quantize the theory, and this generates all the problems of the quantization of this short string. And the resolution of this problem was proposed by Berkowitz, now in 6 or 7 years ago, where he suggested that to treat these constraints basically as if they were all first class, which means introducing a BRC operator. The BRC operator has the form of the constraint multiplied by the corresponding ghost. And the property of the BRC charge is that it should be nilpotent. Now, because of the algebra, once is immediately there. It is not nilpotent. This is what one gets for Q squared. But instead of making it nilpotent by requiring a particular constraint on the states, one requires a constraint on the ghosts. This is unusual procedure, but so one requires that this particular combination is zero. And then one has an important BRST charge, and one can quantize the theory by asking that the physical states are annihilated by this charge. And in fact, one can also observe that the Green-Schwarz action can be written as a free action. For the X fields and the complement, the fermions. So I'm choosing here the conformal gauge on the worksheet, and this is just the free action for all the fields. And then I also need to introduce an action for the pure spin of ghosts. And this is true, this free action is the same as the Green-Schwarz action up to BRST exact service. So the idea is that I can quantize the Green-Schwarz action by just taking three fields and then imposing the BRST operator. Of course, this is not a derivation of this procedure. It's just heuristic, if you want. And this is true only in flat space. Of course, in curved space, this will not be a free action anymore. And
just one question. You have said the D alpha are the full constraints or just part of?
The diagram that you
have used to define the
charts. They are
The whole set of constraints.
The whole set of constraints, yes. However, because lambda is not a full spinor, because of these constraints, it doesn't help. So lambda in principle is a wild spinor, so it has 16 complex components. Because to solve this constraint, it has to be complex. It has no real solution. So it's 16 complex components, but on this constraint there are only 11 independent components, which means this BRST charge only sees, if you want, 11 constraints, so not the full set of the alpha. But it's a bit strange because you would expect that only 8 of the constraints are affected because of the number of degrees of freedom. Instead, here you have 11 independent components. So from this point of view, it's not clear why this works, but one can in fact check it. And now, using the short description of how to compute the spectrum in string theory, you have to write the vertex operator is the most general, say, operator of ghost number one. So lambda is the ghost, so it has to be to have this form with some coefficient alpha, which is a function of the physical fields, x and theta. And now requiring closure with respect to the BRST operator. So first let me say that this constraint implies that the linear combination of the pure spinor is this in general can be expanded in a basis of gamma matrices. Lambda, gamma, lambda. Because of the chirality and symmetry in general in 10 dimensions, this expansion has only two components. One with the gamma m, and one with the gamma with 5 indices. On the constraint, this component goes away, and the linear combination of the spinors is the same as a file form. And this shows that the space of pure spinors, in fact, is can be parameterized by SOTM of U5. This is this coset space because U5 is the invariant group that stabilizes a given file form. And actually, this is up to a scale because the file form doesn't change if if lambda is replaced by a complex, is rescaled by a complex scalar. So yeah, there is also a C factor, and then you see that there are, if you count the dimension, it's an 11-dimensional space. Okay, now one can compute the action of the DST charge on the state, and one finds this equation. It has to be equal to zero, and using the few spin constraints, only the 5-4 part of this equation holds. And this, these are the equation of motion of n equal 1 super Young means in 10 dimensions. It is not immediately evident, but one can see it by choosing a particular gauge, by choosing a gauge in which alpha satisfies these constraints. So this is like a gauge condition, and then one expands this is the spin-off prepotential of the super Young means in superspace, and one expands it in the number of thetas. The first term vanishes because of these constraints, and one finds the first term in this expansion is the usual gauge field, and the next order theta squared one finds the Gluino, and the others are auxiliary fields, and imposing this equation one finds the Maxwell equations for this field. So this is the correct spectrum that one expects for the open string at the massless level. And in principle, one should also construct vertices for massive fields for the excited states, which would involve this, depending on the also derivative on the x and the theta. And it's extremely complicated to construct these vertex operators, and shows that one will be correct equations. It has been done by Berkowitz only in the first, for the first excited states, and one cannot do it covariantly for all the states. It's just too complicated. So, but anyway, there is strong, there are also strong arguments that this should hold for all the massive states. And to complete the presentation of the theory, one also needs to give a prescription for the computation of scattering amplitudes. Also, this is not derived by, cannot be derived from first principles, but there is a prescription which takes this form. One needs some particular combination of the pure spinors and the physical spinors. Okay, maybe this is also. One sees that this particular combination has to be equal to 1. So basically, because this does not involve all the components of the spinor, does not correspond to a Berezin integral, so it's not manifestly supersymmetric, but it is supersymmetric on shell. And the only point I want to make now is that this prescription cannot be derived, and so this formal still is somewhat mysterious. Now, I said that the action was a free action, but the lambda fields are subject to a constraint, so you could have objected that it is not really a free action. So this is just a formal way of writing, but this has to be understood, what does that mean. And one way to understand it is actually when we work in a conformal gauge, we don't really make use of the action. All we need to know are the OPs of the fields, and if you know the OPs, you can compute all the scattering amplitudes. So, and and if you work with lambdas, so the only issue with the OPs is when there are anti-ghosts of simple, because you would like W to be the conjugate field of lambda, which means that the OP should be something like delta alpha beta over Z, but this OP is in fact incompatible with the constraint, so it cannot be true, strictly speaking. But the way out is to never work with W alone, because the fact that there is a constraint on lambda means that there is a gauge variance on the conjugate spin on, which is the constraint generates this gauge invariance on the conjugate spinor, which means we should only work with a gauge invariant combinations. And there are only two gauge invariant combinations with the anti-ghost. One is the ghost current and the generator of the Lorentz invariant, of the Lorentz transformations. So these are gauge invariant currents. And now if you work only with the currents and never write W explicitly, you can just use these currents have covariant of these, and you can work in a covariant way. And basically don't see this problem anymore. However, one can also ask the question, can I really see these Q spinor fields as a real sigma model? So I want to also to understand this as a sensible sigma model, and in particular, I want to understand if there can be anomalies and if it is consistent, in this sense. Some years ago, with Grassi and Bergman-Oisen, had proposed an extension of this formalism that would allow to dispense entirely from the spin-off constraints. Basically, one has to extend the set of fields. We wrote an extended GST operator, which starts with which starts down like backwards GST, but then there are additional fields, additional ghosts, and charges. I won't write the whole thing. There are some terms which are needed to close the DST operator, so to have Q squared equal to zero. And the DST operator corresponds to the full algebra, which is generated by the constraint algebra. So if I start with D times t, I say this generates pi. So this is not a closed algebra. Now I want to see what is the whole algebra generated by this constraint. Then I can take the commutator of d with pi, and this will be something like d theta, and then d theta commutes with everything. So so this is like a central extension of the supersymmetry algebra, and this BST operator which right corresponds basically to this full algebra. However, this does not have the right cohomology, because you see that these are now all unconstrained fields, and so this would imply that we are imposing the alpha equals zero, phi n equals zero as constraints, and this is clearly much too strong. This, for example, implies that all states would have zero momentum. Moreover, there's an additional problem at the quantum level that these are the classical Poisson brackets of the theory. When you quantize and you go at the level of OPs, there are also quantum corrections in the form of double quotes in the OP. And the D of the theta is also something like this. And because of these double quotes at the quantum level, this does not square to zero anymore. So there are more corrections needed. And this. We found that we could cancel them by introducing an additional field C, which is a one form on the worksheet plus something like this. So this is a ghost, and this is the corresponding anti-ghost. And now this Q squares to zero really at the quantum level. However, the cohomology is still not right, because actually now the cohomology is completely empty, as can be seen by the fact that Q acting on D, it only gets contribution from this term, and it's 1. And if you have such an operator that Q on it is 1, this means the cohomology is trivial, because any D BLST plus operators can be rewritten as BLST exact just by applying B to it. This is called the homotopy operator in the mathematical literature. So now it seems that that we face a disaster, but there is a solution. And the solution is to assign some quantum numbers to these fields. And by trial and error, we found that the only assignment that works is to have to assign these quantum numbers. And the opposite quantum number to the corresponding antifields. And we call it grading quantum number. Once you do that, now you can first of all observe that Q is not homogeneous with respect to this quantum number. Rather, it's a sum of terms which have different gradings, but all positive gradings, and that's important because now we can also grade the Hilbert space of states in this way, sum of pieces with different grading. Now, what happens is that if we take a subset of the Hilbert space given by only operators with positive grading, and then you compute Q, and it's consistent to compute Q only on the subspace, exactly because it only has pieces of positive grading, so it maps H plus into itself. And if you compute the cohomology of Q on the subset, on the subspace, now, the claim is this is equal to the cohomology of the Berkowitz operator on the pure spinor on the pure spinor space. And this claim was verified explicitly again at the massless level, where also this can be computed explicitly, and we had arguments for why it should hold also at the massive level.
Can you just type that we have in the figure? So this is H.
I write here. This is the homology of the of Berkowitz PLST charge on the Hilbert space of pure spinors. So basically, in the Hilbert space, where the constraint applies. So basically, we have replaced in this way a nonlinear constraint on the set of fields by some linear condition in some extended space of fields.
Could you explain a little bit how the grading avoids the disaster you had before this QB was going?
Yes, because B now has grading minus 4. So even though U, if you start with some U, which is Q plus, and this is trivialized by this operator BU. However, this this is grading minus 4. So this gets excluded from the Hilbert space when I do this projection. So this is not exact anymore because this operator is not allowed. And okay, it will take too long now to write down all the equations at the massive left master cell and see that you recover the right equations.
So here you just get comma z the ghost number one and physical
states
just the
ghost
number one.
Physical states are just the ghost number one. There is a physical interpretation also for the other ghost numbers. The ghost number two, for example, you get the antifields in the Batalin-Witkowski sense. And ghost number zero is the space-time Young-Mills ghost. The cohomology goes from zero to three. So you get the whole Batalin-Witkowski multiplier. There is A and C, and here A star and C star. Yeah, and it works at all ghost numbers. And this was the situation, but it was a bit unsatisfactory because we cannot prove it works for all massive states. And now, now I go to point two, which is the beta gamma systems. Change point of view from for the moment. And remember, I pointed out a while ago that there is no good understanding of this pure spinor system as a sigma model. Now the recent paper on, well, last year's paper of Witten provided us with the tools of approaching this problem. And Witten taught us that we can study any model of this form when we start with an action. This beta gamma system. We are familiar with beta gamma systems in string theory as the ghost of representation invariants, but these are in some sense flat beta gamma systems. Now we want to study curved beta gamma systems. So we take some field gamma, which is a map from the worksheet to some target space, as usual in string theory. The difference is that now, usually we, to write down the action, we need a metric from the target space in one of these systems. Are defined without reference to any metric, but just we only need a complex structure here. So we take this to be holomorphic coordinates on this target space, and we take beta to be conjugate variables, which are then betas are take value in the cotangent bundle of the target space. So they are one forms, and so this action makes sense, first of all, when M is a flat space. Now, how do we make sense of it when M is curved? First of all, we make it sense of it locally. We write M as the union of patches, where each patch is diffeomorphic to Cn. And then locally, we can write down this action. And then the problem is to patch together the different pieces. So first of all, I should point out that this is a bit unusual procedure in string theory, because now we are associating a conformal field theory to each patch of space-time. So we get some set of different theories that we have to glue together. So in mathematical terms, we are describing a sheaf of conformal field theories. And classically, because this is a scalar, there is no problem. The action is the same if I go from patch 1 to patch B. And this the fact that this is a one-form means that the field beta in a patch alpha transforms is related to the field in the patch beta. As a one form should, with this transformation law. Now you can see the problem at the quantum level is that these are composite operators, because beta and gamma, they have an OP between themselves, so these fields need to be regularized, and this regularization can spoil the property that the beta is the conjugate field of gamma. So we we want beta and gamma in the patch alpha to be conjugate, which means they should have this OP, but also the same should fold in the patch beta. But this this transformation law is not necessarily compatible with these OPs. So the solution is to try to deform this transformation law. Of course, we can we keep the transformation law. These are just the transition functions that describe the manifold as a complex manifold, and there is no sensible way of modifying this, because well, you can try to write down, but there is no sensible deformation. But here we can deform by basically adding some piece. Proportional to the derivative of gamma. And now you have to patch together all this transformation law in such a way that these are expected in every patch. And there can be obstructions in doing this. The obstruction can be described in this way, basically.
So what is capital B?
is something we you should try to find it on this. It's just function of gamma. Because of the dimension, it cannot depend on beta, because this has spin 1. Here it's spin 1, so this has to be a scalar, basically, from the worksheet point of view. So what are we doing is we start with some set of transition functions, which describe the manifold M. And we take a bit of this transition function to a quantum operator, which has to be some automorphism of the beta gamma system. And this satisfies the Kosyukov condition equal 1. And we find the lift, so this lift is defined in each intersection of edges by B alpha beta, but then we need to verify that this is also 1, and in general this is not 1, but it can be something, can be some two cocycle, which is which depends on this beta. Now this beta, you see that from the target space point of view is a 2-4, and this is a 2 cocycle in the sense of check cocycles. So this is an element of H2 and omega 2. So this is the space which contains the obstruction for this leaf to exist. And this is the way we can study the anomaly of the system just locally without having the metric.
So it should be 0 to be defined to the ground system?
Yes. And so this if you map this to the Rank homology, this is a 4 form in the Rank homology, and it's just the first Pontryagin class of the manifold. So this is the result that this has to be 0 for the beta gamma system to be defined. And this comes from analyzing the restriction from having a globally defined theory on the target space. But this was local on the worksheet. If you then want to work also globally in the worksheet, because the sigma can be some non-trivial human surface, then there is an additional anomaly which takes the form of C1M times C1 sigma, so the first class of the tangent space should be 0. And if you want this to be true for any sigma, in practice, you want C1 to be 0, so it should be relatively only. Another way of seeing this is that usually the Calabi-Yau condition comes from requiring the theta function of the sigma model to vanish. And here it's a slightly different origin. If you write the stress energy tensor of the system, it's just beta d gamma. So you write it in some fetch, and then you write it in another fetch. And if you want this theory to define globally a conformative theory, you should have a globally defined stress energy tensor, which means it should be a global section of this sheaf of operators, according to theta. But this does not happen in general, because of the quantum corrections to beta. And what happens in general is that T in fetch beta is related to T alpha by a function which depends on the determinant of the transition functions of the manifold. So you can only define this stress energy tensor consistently if you can find transition functions such that this determinant vanishes. And this is exactly the determinant of the transition function of the cotangent bundle, which is the canonical bundle of the manifold. So the condition of this vanish is that this determinant of the Jacobian can be made constant, say 1, and this is and this again the Calabi-Yau condition. So it's quite striking that it comes out of this purely holomorphic setting. Now, the problem of applying this formula to Puspino is that the Puspino space is a singular variety. It has the structure of this cone over this coset space. So this is a smooth space, but then there is a cone on top of it, and there is a singularity at the origin. This can also be seen from the fact that the equations which define the constraints are not non-degenerate. So you see there is a singularity at the origin. And from the point of view of the beta gamma system, the problem is now what to do with this singularity, and is the model well defined already? And in fact, so you have to find a suitable resolution in such a way that that these conditions are satisfied, so that the Puspino sigma model is well defined. And usually, when you have in algebraic geometry a singular variety, the most natural way of resolving the singularity is to make a blow up at the singularity. A blow up means basically you have a cone, and the blow up replaces the tip of the cone, which is the singularity, by a cycle. Depends on the dimension, so it's p n minus 1 if this was some n dimensional object. And if you start with you can also blow up a point in a regular point of the variety. So if you start with Cn and you blow up the origin, you end up with a space which is in fact the total space of O minus 1 bundle over Pn minus 1. Now you see already that this in general this is not part of the outer space. So even though we start here from a model which was well defined, we do this operation and we end up with a model which is not well defined. And the question is what to do in what is the right resolution for the Puspino case. And Nekrasov has put this following conjecture that we need to take this coset space and replace it times C, which is the cone. We need to replace the space by this is the C is not a trivial vibration, but it's not a direct product, it's a line bundle over the space, and you need to replace the line bundle by the corresponding principal bundle, which means to replace C by C star. And in effect, this does nothing but remove the origin of the fiber. So this proposal is that we take this cone, and the correct space, the target space, is just the cone with the origin removed. So you just take away the singularity. And now one can compute the anomalies in this case and show that they in fact cancel, but this prescription is not, at least to me, but I think it's also general.
So what is the anomaly?
Sorry?
What is the anomaly talking about? What anomaly cancels?
These ones.
Ah, okay.
So the it seems that the sigma model is well defined, but on the other hand, it's not clear what does it mean that you just remove this point. It doesn't seem to really make a big difference from the Puspino string point of view. And an interesting side observation is that if you take the Puspino seriously and you think that the original variety is the right one, then the consequence is that these conditions are not satisfied. But the Puspino space is the Puspino string is not just the Puspino sigma model. There are also the x and theta fields. And so if there's an anomaly in this sector, it can be cancelled by the other sectors. And this would have the consequence that the spinner string is not consistent on flat space, but it requires to be compactified somehow. This to be a curiosity or to be an interesting phenomenologically, but yeah, probably worth exploring. But if you take the most conservative point of view that the string should be well defined on flat n dimensional space, then we need to do something to this space. And now I come to our proposal, which now reconnects to this idea of resolving the constraints by means of this grading. And the idea is that as we can describe a variety, an algebraic variety in local terms, in terms of transition functions, and now we also have a description of the corresponding conformative theory in terms of a sheaf of conformative theories. However, it's the most convenient way of describing a given variety is in terms of some global coordinates. So for example, projective space is best described in terms of homogeneous coordinates rather than in terms of patches. And similarly, we would like to stick to some global description and recover some of these results. And our proposal is that we can do it in the case where n is given by some hypersurface in flat space. So n is a sub-variety of Cn described by some certain number of constraints given by some polynomial, let's say, functions of lambda, set equal to zero. So this defines our variety M. So we want to study the sigma model defined on this variety. More precisely, we want to see if we can find a consistent way of describing the set of states of this space. So I don't have a way of computing the anomalies in this formalism, but what I can do is basically I have three ways of counting what are the physical observables on N. The first way is to solve the constraints. Of course, in general, you can only solve them locally, and then you are back to this prescription of looking in different patches, and then we get this diagram system description. Or the second way is to proceed in a way algebraically, as I did before for the two spinners. I said, you don't really need to worry about the constraints if you can only work with the gauge invariant observables. And from this point of view, I just construct the gauge invariant observables.
So it's here is non-compact.
Yeah, it's non-compact. So I don't know. Yeah, to do it for compact. Okay. Gauge invariant because, again, for any constraint, now there is a corresponding gauge invariance on on the conjugate field. And the third way is what we call the causal resolution. Which I now explain. Of course, this is well known in geometry, and the idea is that you have this variety and you want to describe the space of functions on this variety, holomorphic functions or whatever, and let me just call f of n. And in general, this can be some complicated space, and the idea of causal resolution is that This is an algebra. This, you can obtain this algebra as the cohomology of some sequence. So you construct a sequence of spaces. F0, 1, and so on. It may be finite or infinite. With the requirement that these are all freely generated algebras, and there is a differential operator, there's a differential, so which squares to 0, so this is a complex, and the requirement is that the sequence has cohomology only in the first position, and in fact one wants this to be the original space. And all the higher cohomology groups are vanishing. And there is a canonical way of constructing this sequence. So by F0, we just take the polynomial algebra on the total vector space. Yes?
So basically, it's equal to 0, sir.
Yes, sorry. For k bigger than 0. The way to construct it is to take F0. So we are working in CN, so this is just the polynomials in M coordinates. Let me call them lambda. These are our fields, lambda. And this consultate operator is one introduces additional fields corresponding to the constraints in such a way that delta of the field is the constraint and delta of the original field is 0. And moreover, one assigns some grading to these fields so that C has grading 1 and lambda is grading 0. And then F1, of course, will be all the functions which are linear in the ghost C, and then times any polynomial. And for F2, now it depends if the constraints are reducible or irreducible. If the constraints are irreducible, then F2, F3, and so on are just freely generated by these fields and with the corresponding gradient. But if the constraints are reducible, then one needs to introduce higher order ghosts. So if there is a relation between the constraints such that let's say there are a certain number of relations, so the constraints are not linearly independent, then one would need to introduce some additional field CA of gradient 2, and this is required to annihilate the higher cohomology classes. So this prescription always works at the level of functions on some given space, which for our purposes means it works at the massless level of the sigma model. We want to generalize this so that it describes the whole sigma model also at massive levels. And here one runs into problems for two reasons. First of all, one in general does not manage to have the cohomology vanishing also at higher levels, even though geometrically it does, but when one considers operators which also depends on the anti-ghost, generically one gets cohomology classes.
Does it have any smoothness construction or not in singular?
Yeah, that's it seems to work also when it's singular, so I will give some examples, hopefully. And the other problem is that because of the anti-ghosts, which we need to take into account at higher levels, the sequence does not stop at 0, but is unbounded on both sides. And this, in general, is bad for a resolution. Our proposal, basically, is to use, again, some version of this grading. It turns out that, again, this solves both the problems, and you need to assign the grading properly. So it's just the I call this the grading of the corresponding field. Now the grading of C is depends on the degree of the constraints, and for the moment we analyze on the homogeneous constraints, so some polynomial of degree k, and then we assign that degree k to the corresponding host, and if there are higher order hosts, of course they can have additional degrees and so on. And again, the proposal we do is to take the to restrict the space of observables only to observables which have positive gradings. And our claim is that with this prescription, we construct a sigma model on this variety N, and it is equivalent to what we get by either one of the other two methods. And the advantage is, as you said, here we don't care if the variety is singular or not. In fact, this procedure works exactly in the same way in both cases. And to check it, it's very convenient to construct the partition function of the model. So basically, we take the trace over the interface of the supertrace, actually, of the usual partition function, but now twisted by the ghost number, and we produce an additional parameter to keep track of this grading. Now we expand this partition function in terms of this variable n. Now we have that n of q and t. And as I said, in general, this n can go from minus infinity to infinity. And we just take the regular part. So we take the part which only contains the positive powers of the positive powers of the grading field. And now at this point, we don't care about this parameter s anymore, which was just needed to select the corresponding fields. And But we want this parameter t, which counts the state according to their ghost number. And now the claim is that this partition function, so defined, is the same as the partition function that you can compute by solving the constraints or by constructing the gauge invariant observables. I'll just give you an example of how it works in practice. So. So in general, this partition function, if you have just a free field, this will be 1 over from minus t times the product this comes from the zero modes, and this comes from all the higher modes which have which are higher values of F0, so they get different powers of Q. And this is for a field of ghost number 1. So in our prescription, we always end up with a bunch of fields with different ghost numbers and gradients. And we just get the product of functions of this form. And then we have this product. We have to expand in S. So there is also S, of course, if, to the corresponding grading here too. We expand in S and we keep only the regular part, and this now tells us what are the states of the theory. And the simplest case in which you can study corresponds to a scalar constraint in C2. So we have two let me call X and Y. Two complex coordinates, and they take this very simple constraint, just the product of x and y. And of course, this geometrically is very degenerate, but we see that this prescription makes sense. And So I compute the z, I can expand in q, so that I compute level by level. At level 0, which are the massless states, I find this series. So this one corresponds in fact to the operator 1. Then I have to construct all the states at level 0, so they are constructed only using the 0 modes of x and y. And it's easy to see that all the states are x0 to the n, y0 to the n, and there cannot be any mixed terms, because at level 0, these constraints just read x0, y0 equals 0. So I expand this in Fourier modes, and this is the 0 mode. And x and y both scale like t. So I get two states at level 1, linear t. And these are x0 squared, y0 squared, and so on. And then you can go on at level 1. At level 1, one computes the partition function to be And so what are the states at level 1? At level 1, the constraint is x1, y0, plus x0, y1, equals 0. So this index measures the level, right? So if I must write all the fields which contain either an x1 or y1, or the corresponding conjugate momentum, which also has been 1, so it can contribute to a 0. And but because of the gauge invariance, I can only take the currents. I cannot write down these fields. The corresponding gauge invariant currents are P x times x and P1 times y. And these are these two states which contribute. They scale, they have scaling 0 because x scales inverse of Px. And these are these two states. Then what are these four states? They are just lambda 1, lambda 0, and x1, x0, y1, y0. And then there is j x, x0, and j y, y0. And these are four states. And so on. You can go order by order. And it's interesting in this case to ask what happens if I take the formation of the variety to make it non-singular. For example, one could think that I get the form in this way by taking this parameter. Now what happens? I can study this very easily because this is topologically just a cylinder. I can solve, for example, one coordinate in terms of the other, and so there is only one coordinate independent, but it cannot be zero, so the topology is just C star. So if I take phi, which is long x, as coordinate, this is just a sigma model on the cylinder, and I can write down all the states immediately. So at level 0, I have the Stegeon-like operators, and these are in correspondence with 1, x0 to the n, and y0 to the n. So 1 is 1, x0 to the n is the positive n here, and these are the negative n. At the first massive level, I can have d phi, or I can have the conjugate momentum of phi, and let me go to just p into the I and phi, and again, you can put them in one-to-one correspondence with the states at the massive level. And so at least in this case, it seems that the form in the singularity does not affect the spectrum. This, however, cannot be true in general, because if you start from in high dimensions, if you have a singularity, it can happen that you can resolve it in different ways, which result in different spectrum. But this prescription is unique, so it can at best correspond to one resolution. But we don't know in general how to make this correspondence. But So this, to conclude, I think this confirms our belief that this gradient procedure is correct for the Biospino string, but there's still some work to be done in order to understand geometrically what does it correspond to the from the sigma model. Thank you. Yeah, the problem.
Is it possible to write it as well, to write in some CN?
The problem of doing that in that case is that these constraints are not irreducible, and in fact they are infinitely reducible. So you would need to introduce an infinite number of ghosts for ghosts, and it's not even known how exactly it goes on to all others. So that's why it cannot be directly applied.
Any further questions? Not less 9%.